Welcome to Climate Talk Uganda. My name is Josephine Karunji, and in this episode, we talk about agroforestry. I'm recording this episode standing in an integrated farm with both shade trees, fruit trees, and crops. I'm speaking to an agronomist called Brian Namanya. We are in Bukerekere village in Wakiso on a farm that's about 24 acres. Around me, I see coffee, cassava, matoke, beans, fruit trees like mango and avocado, and numerous shade trees like moringa and acacia. Brian, tell me a bit about yourself.
Right in front of you is Namanya Brian, an agronomist, well conversant in agribusiness, crop production, and environmental conservation and management.
When people say agroforestry, what should that mean to us who are not diligent farmers like you?
Agroforestry basically means practice of farming while integrating crops with shade trees or animals with shade trees.
Are particular trees better than other trees in thinking about where we are standing now? So you have your fruit trees and then you have the shade trees.
Of course, there are great recommendable shade trees which alternate as per different climates. For instance, in Uganda, for coffee farmers, they prefer moringa. And then also there is kodia, which is preferred in Mount Elgon. So it's all about different climates. Then if we go to crops which are basically integrated with shade trees, it is coffee. You can do palm trees and legumes, and you can do avocado and legumes also.
Are there trees that I should never integrate with crops?
Yeah. For instance, eucalyptus. Eucalyptus, it has a strong taproot. So if you integrate eucalyptus with legumes or cereals, for instance, beans and eucalyptus, they will not have enough moisture in the soil because the root formation of eucalyptus, it does dehydrate the soil. It finishes the moisture. Hence, integration is not that productive.
Is it just eucalyptus? Are there other trees? Because I know everybody points out eucalyptus as the worst thing you should ever think about.
The trees which should be selected for integration, they should be having that much deep, so deep taproot, not shallow, because those crops which are integrated, they have to feed on the topmost layers. And then the shade trees, the rest of the shade trees, they have to feed from the deepest layers, which means there is that relation. Fruit trees such as mangoes and jackfruits, they are much more beneficial because you will reap from fruits, you will reap from the crops themselves, and then you also reap from the wood source. When the production is done in the fruit trees, you cut the wood. For instance, back home, we did what they call stamping off. Stamping off is when you cut the tree from the base and then accept it to regerminate. You only leave a breather, a small branch, for the tree to gain more shoots.
How do you measure whether the increasing tree cover that we have is improving the lives of farmers or urban dwellers or communities, and it's enabling them to withstand the impacts of climate change?
I can say, for instance, if you utilize your topography of the soil, For instance, if I own a land which has a valley, I may not prefer to construct in that land because the topography is unfavorable. So, for trees, you can do them in the valley, you can do them on the plain land, you can even do them in the hill. So, it is better to do agroforestry on any topography of the soil. That is one benefit. And then, agroforestry. For those farmers who are in agroforestry, they are reaping high income generation because they're benefiting from a diversity of very many sources. For instance, like I told you, source of wood, a source of timber, like that moringa you see, they normally get the hides. They peel off the hides and then go process crosses. So you will get the shade for your coffee, you get the bark of the tree, you also sell off, and then it will also favor the living things, the living organisms which will support fertility in the soil.
And then you have the fruits to eat. When you think about a successful agroforestry farm, what are you seeing in your mind?
Agroforestry farm? I look at making profits. I look at making profits.
But yeah. What does this farm look like? What is on the farm? How is it taken care of?
About taking care of, course, you see, when we come to trees, we look at pruning. We look up keeping the shrubs short, of course, for pathways, like you see. This is not a bush. And even forests are done what? They are slashed. The shrubs are slashed down such that those rodents, pests, kind of, they can't hide within. Even snakes, such that when we are touring our agroforestry farms, there are no those big, scary snakes. Well, monkeys, they will be around because they are not easily chased away. Yeah, instead they chase you themselves. So actually, agroforestry is fun.
Are there particular crops that are best suited for agroforestry?
Oh yeah, we can prefer climbing crops. Yeah, climbing crops, because they need support. For instance, passion fruits. Then we can prefer cover crops. Those ones which grow from the ground, they don't climb up. So when they are down, they won't compete for sunlight. The sunlight they get in the forest, it will be enough. That's why you see these shrubs and weeds, they are surviving inside the forest. So if you do beans, if you do cowpeas, if you do soybean, name it all. If we come to plants, I will say coffee, I will say banana, I will say cassava, like you can see, I will say palm trees. Yeah.
Some learning for me from what Brian, who is an agronomist, says about the choice of crops and plants for successful agroforestry and the immense benefits they bring to both farmers and the environment. What I hear is that agroforestry is truly a win-win, enhancing biodiversity, improving soil health, and boosting crop yields. So to dig a little deeper, I spoke to Kathy Watson, the Chief of Partnerships for the Center for International Forestry Research and Wild Agroforestry. She was the Chief of Program Development for Wild Agroforestry between 2012 and 2020. And prior to that, she founded and ran two non-government organizations in Uganda, which I'm sure many of us have interfaced with, Straight Talk Foundation and Mvule Trust. Kathy is at the moment in West Nile sub-region. I spoke with her on phone. In my introduction of you, I said that you are at the moment in West Nile sub-region and you are on your way to Rhino Camp. Do you mind if I ask about the work that you're doing there, if it has anything to do with the conversation that we are about to have on agroforestry?
Yes, absolutely. Very happy to talk about it. In fact, I'm in Rhino Camp, refugee settlement, as we speak. I'm in an institution, an NGO, and we've planted, we've given Marcamias, mahoganies, tamarind, some fast-growing exotics like neem. We've given a whole range of trees to this institution, and they now have some shade, and they have some poles as well.
I think the most recent interview I had, I was speaking to an agronomist, and we're trying to figure out where to have the interview from, and it made so much of a difference to be able to stand under the trees while also looking at the crops and speaking to them. And I think we take it for granted, the trees that we have.
Yeah, there's research now on women who work in the field for a good bit of the day, and they don't have a tree to go and sit under when they take a break.
Yeah.
And in the Gambia, there's just been a study that came out that showed you have higher obstetric difficulties for women like that. They're more likely to miscarry, all sorts of things, because the human body is not meant to be in the sunshine for hours and hours and hours and hours. And we really, really need that shade. So it's just, even if you are not very interested in trees, you're bound to be interested in shade.
You have a long history of journalism, working with major news outlets, and now you're writing blogs. I was reading some of them earlier on. What has stood out for you in the storytelling around climate change and agroforestry? What do we need to be aware of?
I think we need to be aware that there's something we can do, and that something is, to a large extent, trees. And you know, people feel powerless. They really, really don't know what to do. But getting the right trees back in the right places, not the wrong trees, because there's a lot of that as well, right? Getting the trees that were once on your landscape that support biodiversity, support the pollinators, all of that is going to be a big win-win for you. So I think probably the telling the story, you want to show how serious things are, but you also want to show that people can do something.
How do we measure the effectiveness of this? Is there any research that speaks to agroforestry?
There's just heaps of research. And we have lots of people at McKinsey and at places like the University and at Nearby College who teach courses on agroforestry. It's really nothing new, right? Even for example, if you have cows, you don't see them standing away from the tree in the middle of the day, right? You see them growing under the tree. And that's a form of agroforestry. So trees in pasture land is an interaction between the agricultural element, which is the cattle, and the tree, right? And when you've got less heat, less wind, in America, less cold, right, the animals are less stressed, they put on weight faster, they produce more milk. It's everybody knows intuitively that that tree is really beneficial for the cattle, right? And don't make your cattle just stand in the blasting sunshine all day long. There are places for the cattle to retreat to.
So in my time speaking with people on climate change, I am yet to find someone who does not speak about trees as the magic bullet. How effective is agroforestry in climate change, really?
I wouldn't say anything's one solution, but I would say that trees are a very, very big part of the solution, right?
Yeah.
So, so agroforestry can be absolutely great if you get the right trees with your crops, right? So let's go back to the pigeon pea example. That is a shrub, but it really, really will produce. It will, if you have it on your boundaries, if you can feed it to your goats, you get the more manure from your goats, you can use the leaves to mulch your soil so it doesn't get too hot, right? And it doesn't die, the life in the soil doesn't die, and because you really want to maintain that, then you're beginning to get all sorts of good things going right there. So even with coffee, for example, in Uganda, if you drive up through Luwero, you can see up the Gulu Road, you can see wonderful traditional coffee agroforestry, right, with the ficus tree, you know, the bark cloth tree, with albizias, all sorts of trees over it, and that it produces the best coffee. But what you've got more and more is people trying to plant coffee just in full sun. But you really need to grow coffee in agroforestry systems all over the world. That's where how they grow it in Central America, for example. So that's the best way to get resilience out of your coffee, a really beautiful formation of beans and good quality coffee, and keep your systems going. And you get all the other stuff that from the fruit, from the trees, like maybe jackfruit or whatever trees you've got growing in your coffee. So that's another good example of agroforestry. Cocoa is also coming up in Uganda. That needs to be grown under trees. Cocoa is an understory tree. It's not a tree that wants to be in the sunlight. It wants to be under, it wants to be in what we call dappled shade, right? Like shade that's mixed, right? Not total darkness, but also not full sunshine.
What have you seen work, strategies that have been most effective in convincing smallholder farmers or farmers in general of the long-term climate benefits of integrating trees in their farming system?
So in the southern hemisphere, where people have not emitted a lot of carbon themselves because it's mostly come out of countries like the UK and the States and China, we don't tell people they have to plant trees to solve the climate crisis. Going from house to house, you notice it's the families that have a husband and a wife and are kind of organized that often take this up. With widows, it's a lot for them to do it. With people with disabilities, it's a lot for them to do it. But if a family gets behind this and we bring them seedlings, they really can take it up. Like we've got plots of 50 by 50 where people have got 100 trees, and they're really, really singing their praises, right? They're selling stuff to poles. They've got kindling. They don't exactly have firewood. They've got a lot of kindling. They've got jackfruit. They've got mango. They've got pawpaw. Okay, pawpaw is hardly even a tree, right? It's a soft thing. But they get so many things, and they really like it, and they want more trees.
Can you share any success stories where agroforestry has been critical in transforming maybe not just the landscape but the livelihoods of the communities there?
Northern Uganda, that land that they had up there, which was so fertile and so good, is largely good because they had what they call a parkland system, which is that there's dotted share trees everywhere, but there's not just dotted share trees. There's also tamarind trees. There's also this tree called balanitis, where people get fruit and they eat the leaves because they're like a vegetable in the dry season. So that's a naturally occurring agroforestry system that we really need to maintain, and it's totally under stress and threat right now from charcoal. And where, for example, great big maize fields have been created around Amuru as you drive towards Parkwatch there, you can't keep that maize producing. There's been some efforts to do like industrial farming, you know, with tractors and plows, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't work in that kind of climate with African soils. They need to have trees which mitigate a lot, you know, the heat and the wind and the pounding rain and the long dry seasons. So those are all examples of places where trees are absolutely essential.
When you think about the smallholder farmer and you think about the role that private sector has to play, how do we get the private sector to critically think about agroforestry and, I don't know, promote it with the smallholder farmers? How do we navigate that?
I think the private sector, like for example with cotton, right? Cotton, you need to see everything on the landscape as a resource, right? We're burning carbon, we're losing our soil. So with cotton, you plant it every year, and you get sticks of cotton, right? And you get the cotton, and then you get left with these woody stems. Currently, they're largely burnt, right? It just releases carbon into the atmosphere. But that, you know, and maybe Ugandans shouldn't care so much about that because, after all, they did not cause climate change. It was the industrialized countries who caused climate change. But for themselves, what they could do is they could turn those stems into something we call biochar, which is like a charcoal, right? Yeah. And you put it into your soil, and it adds carbon to your soil. It is carbon. It's pure carbon. It's stable carbon. And then your soil becomes so much better at holding onto water, and you lose your nutrients so much less. And so that's another thing the private sector can do, right? And don't clear trees. That's the big thing, that we've lost so many of our trees. Work around trees, work with trees positively.
Wrapping up this episode, it is evident that agroforestry holds immense potential in addressing a number of climate-related challenges. A big thank you to both my guests on this episode for sharing their knowledge, and I hope that this conversation has sparked some ideas or a deeper appreciation for the role of trees in farming. Thank you for listening. See you next time. I'm Josephine Karunji, and this is Climate Talk Uganda.